welcome to Rangers Rundown. I should have thought of something before we started recording to say that. That's really Max's job, but we're the Rangers Rundown. We were supposed to have Dave Nichols on today, the writer for the Spokesman Review, covering the Spokane Indians, but we had some technical difficulties that not only swallowed up that opportunity, but also Max himself. My name's Hayden, and joining me is Mike.
Hey, guys.
Fresh off a trip to the Big Apple, getting the Martin Perez blow-up inning experience live and in concert under the bright lights of New York City, Manhattan. How was it?
Well, you know, it was definitely an experience. This is a thing that my daughter and I do every summer. We pick a city and go watch the Rangers play there and then turn it into a little mini vacation. You know, obviously, with a city like New York, there's plenty to see, and we hit all the highlights. We hit Broadway. We did the World Trade Center, the Statue of Liberty, and on and on and on. But obviously, the highlight for me was getting to go see the Rangers play the Yankees. So the experience itself, took the subway, had no problems getting to the Bronx. Just one slight train change at the very end, and had to move over one street and got there. And coming out of the subway and seeing the stadium right there is just, I mean, it makes you want to drool, you know, just dreaming for the day when the Rangers could actually, you know, when Arlington could get their act together and have something like that, so you could actually draw in fans from Dallas and from Fort Worth. It's pretty cool. I mean, because it literally is just right across the street. So we get in and we start wandering around, and it was funny because it had rained quite a bit the evening before and that morning, and so it was humid and hot as all get out. So it was not
nice,
the experience that I was expecting at all. I mean, when we finally got to our seats, we were baking. I mean, it was awful. But
where were your seats at?
They were in the outfield. They were seven rows back in lower right center.
Okay.
So good vantage perspective. The first thing I noticed is that they actually have padded seats, and I thought,
ooh,
why do the Rangers not have this for both the seats and the back? I mean,
They
were really cozy, and they do this with an open air stadium. And I thought, you know, when we go to the retractable roof, there's no reason why we shouldn't have that. And I just, it's like, we've got to figure out a way to get that into the ear of our billionaire owners and see if we can't make that happen, because
that was
about the best thing ever about the whole experience. But so we went looking for food, and I'll have to say, on that front, I was deeply disappointed.
Really?
The Rangers have them beat hands down in the concession department. Not just in the offerings, but you know, I asked someone working there, I said, okay, do you have a place where we can sit down, like, you know, get service in the air-conditioned restaurant? And he said, maybe try over at this place and this section over here. And we walked halfway around the outfield, and no, it was just, in fact, it wasn't even a restaurant. It was just a bar, and it was outside. It just had some like four picnic tables. And I think those were the only sit down chairs that I saw outside the actual seats in the stadium the whole time we were there. They don't want you to sit anywhere but in your seat. I thought that was really bizarre, that there's not areas to congregate, you know, on the outside of the concourse.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, to not have any sit-down restaurants like that available, I thought that was a big letdown. And so then we finally decide on something. They had one of their concession stands was actually a Jersey Mike's, which I initially thought, well, cool, you know, that's a good experience. But the only thing they offered was Philly cheesesteaks. So my daughter got one of those, and she said it was okay. And I saw a concession stand just a little bit over, and it was advertising that they had a sausage and pepper sandwich. And if you've ever been to Fenway and gone and gotten yourself a sausage and pepper sandwich from a street vendor outside of Fenway, you'll know what a beautiful experience that is. They saute it up right in front of you. It's got the bell peppers, big strips, you know, the sausage and the cheese and all that, and big old hoagie. And I order this, and they call my name when it's ready, and I go to pick it up, and it's a very spare ballpark bun with just a dried up sausage.
Oh, and, no.
And nothing else. And I'm like, where's the peppers? And they point me to where there was...
Oh, no.
Yeah, you just... It's like, you know, they had a little Sterno heat thing underneath the, underneath the tray. And it's just... They were so mushy. You didn't need teeth to eat them. It was awful. I just thought, wow, I expected more on that front, because that's one of the things I really look forward to when I'm visiting these parks is what's the regional fair like. I want to find what's the cool thing that this stadium offers and I can't get back home. But apparently there it was just crap food. So going from there, I mentioned, you know, that it's really hot, and yeah. Was wanting some relief, and since there were no sit-down restaurants, what's the other obvious choice? You just go to the gift shop, right?
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, and even that, it struck me as really odd, because I guess because everything in New York is this way, because every square inch of real estate is being utilized in that city, even their gift shop was tiny. I mean, when you compare it to the one that's... You've been to the one in the outfield.
Oh, yeah,
at Globe Life. I would say you could have fit maybe 12 of the Yankees gift shops inside of that. Mm-hmm. Easily.
Huh. I guess if you have only two jerseys for sale, you don't need to have a bunch of clothing racks or something like that.
Well, it was all... They had the Judge ones, they had the Stanton ones,
yeah.
But it was a lot of Mantle and Ruth and DiMaggio.
Oh, that's
and
true. Yeah,
Murder's yeah. Row T-shirts and stuff like that.
27 rings, count the rings, baby.
Oh yeah. They definitely had that. My daughter looked at me. She goes, "How many rings did the Rangers have, Dad?" I said,
"Oh,
shut up." So that was the gift shop scene.
Okay.
Now let's talk about the crowd,
okay.
You know,
yeah,
because this is a baseball town, right? I mean, this is they support their Yankees,
especially in the outfield.
There might have been about 25,000 people there.
Really?
There were,
and you were on a Sunday, right?
Uh huh. Sunday, okay. Day game, not a cloud in the sky. There were sections that were empty.
Really?
And I thought, this is a team that's in contention. This isn't a rebuilding team.
No,
I was really surprised by that. So it's funny when, you know, Rangers get knocked around for not being a baseball town, and mm-hmm. you know, people like a winner. And yeah, outside of Cubbies fans, I don't know that any team is going to have, you know, 100% support 100% of the time. So that was kind of my take on the crowd. They were okay. I mean, they had some chants going early, but it died down pretty quickly, and then it was just everyone kind of sat on their hands afterwards. I mean, you know, they would cheer when there were good plays and whatnot, and there were plenty because Perez was on the mound. But yeah, but by and large, it was a generic crowd. I didn't sense any kind of vibe like I've sensed before at a Red Sox game or a Cubs game. I mean, those cities, they definitely have a vibe about them.
Yeah,
there's some electricity in the crowd there, and I didn't get it, and so. And so that leads me to my last parting shot, and this was the one that might have surprised me the most.
Okay, because, let's hear it.
Because again, baseball town, right?
Right.
You've been to Fenway, right?
Yes, loved it.
Okay, what's the scene like outside the stadium?
It's loud and Disney.
What are the offerings?
I would say.
What are the offerings?
Lots of bootleg T-shirts.
Bars.
Okay, yeah. There's lots of bars.
Street vendors.
Yeah. Those steak and pepper stands all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it's a scene, and it's a place you can just hang out for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had taken a photo of what I saw. Now, granted, I didn't walk all the way around the exterior of the ballpark, but I was on the side where the subway came in. So you would imagine. That's where you'd expect to see the most activity, right?
Right.
Especially since it's in the Bronx. No one's going to be straying too far from the ballpark in the Bronx. You don't want to get lost out there. So across the street, right next to the subway, they had one bar, and I walked inside, And it was the lamest thing. And there was some guy that looked like he was homeless, and he was yelling at the bartender. There weren't any chairs in there. You just had to stand and lean against this bar. It was surreal. It was so... It just...
Uncultured? Like,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's awful. That was the only bar. And then there was, like, a really lame gift shop. Then there was a dollar store. I mean, it was just low rent. You're like, okay, I'm never going to complain about Texas life ever again.
That's crazy, especially because speaking of Texas Live, I mean, it's designed to be around the brand new stadium. The Yankees have a brand new stadium themselves.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Oh yeah, I just looked up Yankee Stadium on Google Maps just so I could get a sight of it.
Uh-huh.
And what it has right here is Family Dollar is literally like one of the highlighted places.
Oh yeah.
There's the there's a Subway stop, and then there's the Family Dollar. I see what uh-huh. you're saying. Yeah.
And that's literally it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well,
so
how was the stadium as a whole? Like was it nice? I mean, because it's only 7 years old, something like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, aesthetically, great ballpark, you know? I mean, very crisp. I got there early enough. One of my favorite things to do, and it's made me sound like an even bigger baseball dork, but I like watching the grounds crew getting the field ready. I like watching them, you know, pour the chalk down the first and third base lines, and watch them, mm-hmm. like to watch them watering the infield dirt, you know, and that just to me, that's just an
it's
experience.
Pure.
Yeah, it's pure, and it's the same everywhere you go, and it's just really fun to watch, and so taking in all that, and you know, we chose not to wear Rangers colors just because, not that I feared for my life or anything, but having to take the subway in the Bronx, I just didn't want to get harassed with my daughter there with me. It just wouldn't have been worth it.
Just in case,
but there was a family sitting next to us, and they'd all come in from upstate New York to watch the game, and the dad ended up talking baseball with me, and he was just generally interested in the fact that, you know, that we had this tradition and we were coming from Texas, and asking what it was like there. And it was a good experience from that perspective. We had a good time. We definitely had a good time.
Good. That's so interesting that it had so many like small failures though, like the gift shops and the food and just like the atmosphere. I mean, I don't know much about the Bronx and, you know, at the specific area that it's at, but you'd think that if we're in the city that never sleeps, you know, there would be some development in like, lots of energy around the ballpark. Because like whenever I went to Comerica Park in Detroit, one of my favorite parks I've ever been to, and we were there for a Rangers game on a Tuesday, I think. And I mean, the Tigers aren't good. The Rangers are not an exciting team that people travel to go see. You know, it's not a rivalry game. And it was during the week, and yet it was still like a lot of like energy and excitement and noise, and like there's stuff going on all around it. And that was in Detroit, which is, I guess, like the opposite of New York right now because of, you know, it's Detroit. That's interesting that they didn't, that was your experience. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to going out there at least eventually. I'm going to be there in November, but obviously there's going to be no baseball. But I can at least take a picture in front of it and
look
at the dollar store and maybe go into that bar, and I'll send you a picture and be like, man, you really missed out. You should have hung out a little longer. Like, this is a great spot. You were too quick to judge, my friend.
Well, what was weird about that bar was that, okay, I mean, first off, you know, I'm going in with my 15-year-old daughter, and I'm just wanting to kind of just check out the scene, and the bouncer catches me right away. He's like, oh, she can't go in here. And I said, not at all. And he said, well, you can go to the back room, and he pointed me to this back room. And so it's like you went back there, and remember, I said there were no chairs at the bar. Well, mm-hmm. in this back room, there was another bar, again with no chairs, but there were like some kind of like ottomans and love seat type things up against the wall. And it looked like, I mean, it looked like a topless bar. Like there was an area where like, that was the stage.
Oh, gosh. Little girl, we don't want you to be around this booze. Let me take you to some place that's a little bit more your speed.
The champagne room.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it was a really surreal experience being in that place. I was like, I cannot believe this is the bar outside of Yankee Stadium.
Well, there you go. I'm glad, to hear that you went. And you managed to talk about all of the bad things about Yankee Stadium without even mentioning Martin Perez. So good on you. That just shows how distracting the everything else was.
Exactly.
How bad the sausage and peppers were. you're more mad about that than...
I mean, you expect it out of Perez. You didn't expect it out of the food.
That's true. Yeah. You just say, well, that's the way it goes, I guess. Yeah, that's good. Did you make it at all to Citi Field and see that at all?
I did not. Okay. We were there 3 days, and like I said, we hit all the historical highlights. We were in Times Square. We were on Broadway. We saw Radio City Music Hall, NBC Studios, The Empire State Building. We walked 15 miles in 3 days. It was
nice. Yeah,
it was exhausting.
But you feel so accomplished.
Yeah.
looking down at your phone and be like, oh heck yeah.
Yeah.
I deserve this. Steak and sausage or whatever.
Yeah, I did over a half marathon in 3 days.
Congratulations! Yeah, in the hot, sweaty New York, that steamy summer. It's legendary. Yeah. I've heard about it. Well, cool. I'm planning on going, like I said, to New York in November when there's going to be no baseball, but definitely have to see all of the other stuff too, like 9/11 Memorial. I really am looking forward to going to see.
That was beautiful. That was beautiful. Yeah. And then the new tower is it's awe-inspiring. I mean, it's so big and so majestic. Mm-hmm. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, I've heard they did a really great job, and an honorable job, and an honest job, an inspiring job, and all that stuff. So really looking forward to that. And then, but previous to that, I'm going to be going to San Diego in Los Angeles in September, in about a month. So I can report back about Petco Park, and I'll talk about the size of the sandbox and how many of their sandboxes you can fit in the center field gift shop. That place is huge. I do really like it.
It is.
There.
Yeah.
They have that big wall of hats in the back. I always check that out and see if they have anything worthy to put on my head, which most of the time they don't. But actually, I went back, like I said, I went to the first game of the season, 2 weeks ago? And they had a lot of really great hats. So whoever is the buyer for them, they must have gotten a new buyer of hats from New Era, because very much my speed, as opposed to what they usually have. Anyways, let's see, what else can we talk about here? Oh, we were supposed to have Dave Nichols on. Mentioned that in the very choppy intro there. So we did have some technical difficulties with that. If you don't know Dave Nichols, you should follow him on Twitter, which I can pull up his Twitter handle right now, unless you know it off the top of your head.
I do not.
Okay. It's at DNicholsSR. So Dave Nichols for the Spokane Review, or Spokesman Review, sorry. Writes about sports up there in the area and live tweets a lot of those Indians games, which is great because we do have a lot of really exciting young prospects there, and some that are kind of older but still young and exciting, like JPM and Diospel Arias and Emmanuel Clase and all sorts
Curtis
of guys.
Curtis Terry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and Jax Biggers, which, Jax you know, Biggers, that
great name.
Yeah, 80 grade name.
Oh, yeah. And, I had a list earlier. But, so we'll try to get him back on. He seemed willing to rejoin us in an attempt when we can actually record his voice, because there's really not sense in talking about those players unless we can record it and share it with you guys with the thousands of listeners, which, actually, I can talk about this, too. We don't have thousands of listeners, but our last episode with Tepid got over 1,200 downloads, which is really great because we don't really advertise and we don't really have any reason for you guys to listen to this except for just that you think that we're doing a pretty good job on this 36-plus episode adventure of ours. And so thanks for listening. If you haven't listened to the Tepid episode, really great, really... dialed in, plugged in, like literally with sources and scouts texting him about these players. He has a lot of great opinions, knows a lot of these minor league players personally, and a lot of like the development staff for the Rangers and the front office guys personally, and that stuff just jumbles out of him. Like he can't help but just to share like really inside knowledge. So go back and listen to that if you haven't listened to it.
He has a true love of the game. I mean, it shows. Such a great guy. But I think that this is something that our podcast is able to offer that I'm not seeing, in other avenues of the media, is really getting down to that level of detail in the minor leagues. Most of the time, the most you're going to know about a player is just what you see in a box score. And that's why we were attempting to get Dave on, and we will get him on. And then we're going to go after some of the other guys, like in Kinston and in Hickory, and really be able to get some stories about these players. And you see beyond the numbers, what's this guy's motivation? What's his background? How was he raised? Was he from an island or, some stretch of the United States? So hopefully that insight will be invaluable to our listeners, and you guys will keep listening. We appreciate you downloading our podcast.
And this is a great time to, in retrospect, looking back on this, we've talked about it and thought about it. It's kind of funny that, you start to have a Rangers podcast in a year where they're there's a good chance they're going to end up with a top five draft pick. The fruits of their labor this year is going to be a good draft pick, which is not good in the playoff standings and the excitement standings and all that kind of stuff. But what we've been able to do is it kind of forces you to look at what's going on in the minor leagues. And fortunately, you can say what much worse things about other franchises and as far as the state of the farm goes. And so it actually has been a pretty good at first blush you think, oh, you're covering a team that will probably end up between 60 and 70 wins. That's going to be really great. What are you going to talk about? Well, we've been able to actually talk about these really exciting young players. And so Tepid being on was great. Nichols being on is going to be great. All the other guys that we're going to have on is going to be great. And just we don't really want to pour into the Martin Perez and Matt Moore's box scores, but we will tell you about Curtis Terry winning the home run derby out in Spokane and things like that that are there's just so many names that there's just so many names that are good by 2020, 2021 and on. Surely we'll be able to field the competitive team, right? Like that's the whole point of stockpiling the farm. A handful of these are going to filter out and be major league regulars, and they're going to be good, and we're going to win the World Series before we die, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely
we
are.
I mean, all headed.
In 2 years, this is going to be a really exciting team to watch, because once these kids start developing, then that's when JD will work his magic and really start filling in around them, with big-time talent through trades, through free agent signings, and getting creative. And I have full and complete faith in JD. I know he's had his misses. Every GM does. On Lone Star Ball, a lot of times I think that he kind of gets the short end of the stick from some of those guys, because he's not turning us into a World Series contender. They slight him for the trades that didn't get us to the World Series in the mid-teens. And it's at least you have an ownership group and a GM that's trying. And that is enough to give me hope for the future.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people say, and I mean, we don't know. We can't see the future. But a lot of people say, well, JD has got us in this mess and he's got to go or something like that. Well, he definitely deserves the chance to rebuild it, and I don't think that we're even in this position because of anything bad that he did. I think it's just mostly the nature of the sport. I mean, hindsight's 20/20. Do you trade for Prince Fielder? No. Do you give Chu the contract? Most likely no. Some other signings.
The Hamels trade.
Hamels
trade. A lot of people slot him for that. At the time, everybody was in love with that trade, and he took him to the playoffs, and that's what you want your team to do. Your GM, to put them in a position where they may make a run, because wild card teams, they do win the World Series.
Yeah, well, and let me say this about the Hamels trade then, is that at the time it was seen as this is a ballsy move. Of course, we were able to make sure that Cole Hamels and Jake Diekman had plenty of years of control left, so it wasn't just a rental kind of move
right.
at a long shot. Chance at the playoffs. It ended up working out immediately, which was awesome. But it was also seen as, oh, right, they gave up a lot of talent. And we sure did. Jake Thompson, drawing a blank, Nick Williams,
Jorge Alfaro.
Yep. All these guys that, I mean, it was a good haul for the Phillies. They made a really good trade. Looking back on it, I would still do that trade over again because a lot of those players have not panned out. Jake Thompson just got released.
Well, and a lot of people forget that in the midst of all that, we also unloaded Matt Harrison's contract, and I thought that was a thing of beauty because I thought, oh my gosh, we're going to be saddled with this thing forever. That was a great move by JD.
Yeah. Yeah, he had over $40 million, I'm sure, left on that deal, and we got to get rid of that. And you know, you don't want to part with prospects, but the reason why, like, the nature of trades when you're trading multiple prospects for, like, one player is because there's a chance that only one of those prospects out of the three or four that you're trading away is actually going to amount to anything of value. So you're kind of hedging your bets a little bit. And it'd be great if all of the players turned out good, but a lot of times they don't. I mean, and same thing with the Luke Roy deal, man. Like, I did not want to give up Lewis Brinson, and I did not want to give up Lulu Ortiz, but we did. And Cordell did in that deal.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big trade. And the jury is still out for sure, and obviously Luke Roy's time here ended very poorly, and Jeffers too. But Lewis Brinson is one of the worst players in baseball this year. Luis Ortiz has still not made the major leagues, and has got, you know, there's serious concerns about his physique and if he's going to be able to, like, actually have a long career in the major leagues.
So, and we did end up getting a prospect for Luke Roy. I forget.
That was Hunter Cole. No,
yes.
No. That was Sam Dyson. Luke Roy. Oh, it was Pedro Gonzalez.
Yeah, that's it.
Outfield. Just, he's part of that stable of outfield prospects. So those trades were risky at the time, and you say, all right, well, they're going for it. You know, you got to give up talent to get talent. And at the same time, like, he's made the right trades. He's kept the right guys. Gallo, Mazzara. We still have Calhoun, and we're optimistic on him.
Condor.
Guzman's going to be good. Profar. I mean, shoot, how many trade proposals do you think JD has fielded for Jerks and Profar over the last 5 years? 1,000. And yet he's kept him. Like, he's kept the right guys. Imagine if, I mean, Mazzara is still not the star that we want him to be yet. But imagine if we had traded Mazzara for Cole Hamels instead of Nick Williams, and we had Nick Williams out there. You'd say, you know, I don't know, I think that I might have rather had Mazzara. You know, why did JD trade away Mazzara? He's great. And you see that he's just an adjustment away from being an all-star player. And, like, well, good thing he kept the good guys. So I think that, like, the public perception of the JD haters is too much about, like, oh, well, he just sold the farm off so he could go try to win a dumb old World Series, which is the whole point, by the way, and doesn't actually come back to revisit it of, like, you know what, that was actually a good trade. I mean, we gave up talent, and you know, those players are no longer with the team, but at the same time, like, that's what prospects are for. They're for getting Cole Hamels.
I don't know about you, but I had a blast watching that pennant run, watching us chase down Houston that year. That
was so great.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful.
And then in 2016, when we got Luke Roy, we had a full season of Hamels. Mm-hmm. Darvish was back. It was a great team. That was, and Ian Desmond, that was my favorite team. And that was good Rugi before he turned into bad Rugi. But that 2016 team was my favorite team of all time until they, you know, went egg on their face, and then egg on their face in Toronto, and got swept, even though they led the league in wins. But whatever. Point is that we fielded great teams. We played really well. Those teams were really well built. And it's just the cycle of competitiveness that you can't stay in first place forever. And so absolutely give him the shot to turn it around. We already see the exciting players in the farm system, even though they're at the lower levels, especially on the pitching side. And I also look to the like what he inherited. When he became the general manager in, like, 2004, I think, and the
was
Rangers
it that early?
Were...
It's been a while. 2006.
I think the first trade that he made, or one of the first ones, was Soriano for Brad Wilkerson.
Okay.
And my mind says that was 2004. It might have been 2006.
But was he assistant? 2006. Was he assistant to what's his name that we got from Cleveland as the rental GM for a while?
Let me see here. Let's see.
Guy that was on the golf course all the time.
Tom, not Tom Hicks, is it?
No. That was
John Hart.
Yes, John Hart. Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe so he was assistant to John at that point in time. I don't know.
Yeah. So he was. So JD was the director of baseball ops in 03. Look here. According to Wikipedia, he negotiated multi-year contracts for Michael Young, Hank Blaylock, and Francisco Cordero. And then in October of 05, John Hart announced he was stepping down as GM, and then he was replaced by John Daniels. So at age 28, he became the youngest GM in baseball history. And yep, his first major deal as general manager was Alfonso Soriano for Brad Wilkerson, Termal Sledge, and Armando Galarraga, a move that perplexed many Rangers fans in the DFW area at the time. Yep, I that's exactly how I felt. I remember seeing it on the front page of the newspaper, like in one of those newspaper stands, and being like, what the heck? And then Brad Wilkerson, I mean, that wasn't a good trade.
No.
But we also, for some reason, couldn't convince Soriano to play the outfield once and for all. But
as he was moved, he played the outfield.
Exactly. That's a tale for like some kind of baseball historian, somebody that had some inside information. I don't know what was going on there. Point is that when he became the GM in 05, I mean, we had a good team in 04, but that was kind of the only outlier in that 2000 to 2009 or 2008 range where we were actually anything good at all.
Right.
So he inherited a bad team. He was the general manager all the way through the bankruptcy years and all that kind of stuff. Like, he's been very good in unideal situations. He built the farm system up. We went to back-to-back World Series. He has traded the right players, it seems like, and he's building the farm system up again. Like, there's no reason to doubt him. I mean, he's signed every GM signs bad players. Every GM will sign a Brad Wilkerson, or sorry, not a Brad Wilkerson, Lance Berkman. But I mean, are you really going to say that you don't trust him with your team? Would you rather have like freaking somebody from the Mets organization running it, or like the Reds,
or the Orioles,
or I mean, you can even look at the Nationals with. Is Rizzo is their general manager's name? I don't remember his first name.
Yeah, but, Bryce Harper. He's for sale. Oh wait, he's not for sale. We're not going to trade him. We are going to trade him.
Yeah, I think they trade him. I think they do.
I mean, how do they not? I mean, at this point, if I was Bryce Harper, I'd say I want off this team.
They're like 9 games out. They have to do it. They have to do it.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's just JD. We're a pro JD thing. Podcast, and I don't really even see a good reason to be anti-JD. I mean, you can maybe look at the state of the farm system and say, you know, I really think that we have a lot more work to do, and these are all of the red flags with all of our guys, and we can't have our pitching prospects stay healthy, and we've never had pitchers, and when are we going to get pitching up in here, and, you know, Guzman is a flash in the pan, and we have too much money tied up in Chu, and Calhoun can't play the field, and Mazzara can't play the field, and Beltre can't play the field, and yeah, I mean, you can find all of, you can nitpick, but big picture, like, we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine.
Absolutely.
And they're going to put another celebration statue up. Did you see that one with Neftali Feliz and Benji Molina that they just unveiled?
I saw it in the news. I went out to Texas Live last Friday with my daughter right before we went to New York.
Okay.
Just wanted to check it out and stop by Lockhart Smokehouse and get some good barbecue. And it's pretty neat. I didn't see the statue there. We didn't wander through the whole thing. There's a pretty good crowd there. I mean, especially for it being a non-game night. But yeah, I would definitely go there again. It's a cool place to just to go hang out for a little bit.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of cool things. We've definitely been kind of wary to the side of negative about the whole thing. I think partially becomes with the fact that it's like, are you sure that we really have to stay and hang out in Arlington? But other than that, like, it does deserve the benefit of the doubt. And I've heard a lot of really cool things about it, and especially with, you know, the fact that there's going to be college football games there and high school football playoffs and all that kind of stuff, and a hotel eventually. It's going to be maybe a good place for out-of-town fans to come and spend the weekend, which I guess is what Arlington was hoping for when they gave up $500 million of public funds. But that's another discussion.
Well, and for 8 Sundays in the fall and winter, we can capitalize on the Cowboys fans.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be sweet. Yeah, I should check it out sometime. Maybe I'm going to try to go to that Beltre final game.
Yes.
In September, which, question for you, do you think that Beltre retires at the end of the season? Do you think this is it?
I mean, after the third hamstring injury, he's got to be beyond frustrated, you know. Yep. And he's one of those guys that said, you know, I'll play as long as I can help the team out. I think he's got to be doing some soul searching right now and questioning whether he's actually doing that. It's sad, you know. I mean, for how many years do we say Beltre, he's drinking from the fountain of youth, the guy never ages, and then it just happened all at once. I love the guy, but I can definitely see them see him going and hanging him up at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that exact same thing. I think he's fortunate enough to still be able to hit. He has a good batting average this year, and it's just the power is not really there. Which is unfortunate because his last major milestone that he was in reach of would be the 500 home runs. He's not going to get that.
No.
I feel pretty confident about
that. He couldn't get that next year. No.
Yeah, exactly. He can still play, but I don't think that the way that the team is constructed right now, and unless something major happens with Calhoun, Mazzara, Chu, Gallo, that whole
Profar.
Kind of Profar, that whole kind of clump of players that would factor into his playing time, I think that he can see that there's not really a spot for us to have like a bench player to play third base and DH, and he doesn't want to be a bench player. He doesn't deserve to be a bench player. Like,
no,
he's deserved the spot to say, if I'm not going to start, I'm just going to go home. He's earned the time with his family, and he's got to be more upset than anybody about the state of his legs. So I don't know. I do think this is going to be it, and I don't know if we're going to hear about that before the season ends or not. I would bet you there's going to be probably sometime in September where he actually – I think that he will say before it's his last game. I don't think it's going to be an off-season announcement. That way at least he can have a final send-off and at least give the fans a chance to see him one last time, because he's always is into that, into the fans, and being a fun player to watch. And yeah, so September 23rd.
If you haven't gotten tickets yet, you need to.
Gosh.
Just in case.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay, so before we start crying, Beltre, we love you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being one of our loyal downloaders. We should send him an actually good postcard. We haven't actually sent one of those out yet. I'll get on that.
Okay.
Just like we have so many other ideas that we haven't done yet. But it's okay. We have time left in the season.
We've got nothing but time.
We got nothing but time, man. But speaking of that, we are out of time, and we will see you guys recording on Sunday. Maybe we'll try to get Dave Nichols on. I don't know or not. Don't know what his schedule is like, because we were really trying to do that today. But we'll have him on soon. And
go Rangers.
Go Rangers. And if you're anti-JD, just let us know why. We're at Rangers Rundown. And apparently we're also on Stitcher somewhere. I couldn't find it. That's Max's thing. So go bother him and say, where's the Stitcher link? So
yes.
Anyways. Thanks. Go Rangers.
Good night, guys.
Go Spokane Indians. Good night.